I was doing a extreme athletic event called Tough Mudder. And I looked over at my leg. I looked down and I panicked and I thought, oh my God, I really can't walk.
A swift break, concise and critical at the worst possible moment. Seemingly innocuous, like so many other common physical injuries.
And they tried to pick me up, and I looked at them, and I had tears in my eyes, and I said, please let me finish what I started. My son's coming with me. He lifted me up. He put me on the Jeep that was the medic Jeep. So I held my son's hand, and we crossed the finish line. And literally, about 2 minutes after that happened, I did go into shock.
In the days to come, however, a clotting disorder can catalyze this simple recovery from ordinary fracture into a near-death experience.
Then I kind of lost it emotionally, realizing that I had three children and that what she was saying to me is that I was at risk of dying in any minute.
Every 6 minutes, somebody in America dies of a blood clot.
We're here to change that statistic. Welcome to Taking a Breath, a Stop the Clot podcast.
A podcast dedicated to bringing awareness of the dangers of blood clots from the clotting disorders community to the world.
With the help of many notable blood clot survivors, we are here to give you the knowledge and the skills you need to prevent this silent killer.
My name is Leslie Lake. I am the president of the National Blood Clot Alliance, and I am a blood clot survivor.
And my name is Todd Robertson. I'm the patient engagement liaison for the National Blood Clot Alliance, and I am a six-time blood clot survivor.
And we're here to stop the clot. What does it mean to be an advocate? As a powerhouse in both podcasting and media at large, our guest today is a testament to the apex of that very question. Not only is she a decorated name in North American media, but she is also a blood clot survivor and advocacy partner to the National Blood Clot Alliance. Somebody whose commitment to enriching the world through the power of storytelling knows no bounds. The founder, CEO, and president of Everything Podcasts, please join me in welcoming mother, survivor, and advocate, the incomparable Jennifer Smith.
I'm Jennifer Smith. I'm the founder and CEO of Everything Podcasts, a global podcast company, and I am a blood clot survivor. I wanted to share my story today about being a blood clot survivor. I was doing an extreme athletic event. And it was called Tough Mudder, and it was at Whistler in British Columbia. And I had been training for 6 months. I was in the best shape of my life. It was amazing. My trainer was there. I did it with a best friend of mine. And it was our race. Like, we were so ready. So we did this race, and there were 13 obstacles, and hence the name Tough Mudder. It was mud. We were climbing on bellies. We were jumping obstacles. We were, you know, almost in many ways felt very much like we were Superman. It was incredible. The rush was incredible. The energy, the people that were there. And I had trained for this for 6 months. And I was so excited to be there. And right at the finish line, they had a 35-foot slide that was made out of metal. And there were people that lined up, and these folks were literally 12 people in queue. They would slide down this slide into a 5-foot pool of water, and the water was mud water. So I slid down, and I landed on the trench and snapped my ankle, which is called the fibula, from top to bottom. And instantly, I assume my body went into shock, because I don't remember a lot of the details, but I couldn't stand. And looking out in front of me was my family, because this slide was in fact 150 yards from the finish line. This event was 6 hours in, 6 months of excruciating training. And all of a sudden, here I am looking at the finish line on the left, looking at my family on the right, with my three children holding a sign saying, "Go, Mama J, go." And I couldn't stand. I was in this haze of not being not only able to finish the race, but not being able to stand or to walk or to get out of this pool. So the medics came, they brought me and laid me down, and I looked over at my leg. My oldest son, Joshua, looked down and he screamed in a shrill. And he said, "Mama, your leg's going the other way." And my wife was crying and my twins were crying. At the time, my twins were 4.5 years old and Joshua was 9. I looked down and I panicked and I thought, "Oh my God, I really can't walk." And so I looked at the medics and I said, "I made a commitment to finish this race with my older son." And I started to crawl as though I was in the army. And the medic yelled at me and he said, "What are you doing? Miss, we have a problem. We've got to get you to the hospital." And I said, "Sir, we teach our children that when you start something, you finish it. And I just got to finish. It's only over here." And he said, "You can't. You're in a lot of trouble. We got to go." And they tried to pick me up and I looked at him and tears in my eyes. And I said, "Please let me finish what I started. My son's coming with me." And he said, "Ma'am, you just signed a waiver form. We've got to get you to the hospital. Like, your body's going into shock." And I said, "It'll just take a minute. Please, please." And he actually swore at me and said, "For Christ's sakes, woman." So I held my son's hand and we crossed the finish line. And literally about 2 minutes after that happened, I did go into shock. So he was right. I woke up and I was on a gurney. My family was there. My best friend that I had done the event was there. And she looked at me and she said, "It's going to be okay, honey. We're all here. It's going to be okay." And I looked at her and I said, "What are you talking about? Where am I?" And I looked down and they had me in a gurney and they wrapped me in these heated blankets and there was mud everywhere. And I remember feeling this excruciating pain in my leg. And I just bellowed out in fear and pain and screamed and said, "My God, this hurts so much. Can't somebody stop? Make it stop." And then my kids started to cry and it was just this big situation. And then the doctor came in and he said to me, "Miss Smith, we have good news and bad news. What do you want first?" And I said, "Just go." And he said, "The good news is you might not need surgery and the bone may fuse on its own. But you need to be really clear about one thing." And I said, "Okay." He said, "We're going to put you in a cast. We're going to give you painkillers and you have to go home and you have to rest. And whatever you do, don't move. Because if you don't move, then the bone will have a chance to fuse." So my family brought me home and when they had to bring me through the garage because we live in a 4-story house. And that's where I spent 8 days in the basement suite of our home, trying to allow my bone to fuse. Within that 8-day period, on the 11th day, my brother came up from Seattle and he carried me up the stairs so I could enjoy a Canadian Thanksgiving. As I was sitting at the table, I had these shooting pains going in my calf, but this was unlike any pain I'd ever experienced in my life. And the interesting thing about it was, it wasn't pain in one moment. It was shooting pain that kept coming continuously. And I thought, why does my calf hurt so much? My leg was so hot as far as heat. And then I look down and I see that my calf is actually coming over top of the cast, that there's that much swelling. And it began to feel like the cast wasn't fitting anymore. And it was so tight that it was squeezing. And I looked over and I pulled my pant leg up and I saw that in fact my calf was now blue and the color of red and purple. The fact that it was in not the place I broke my ankle and it was in my calf felt curious to me, like, what? I don't get the relationship. Why is that happening? And I thought, oh geez, this is probably not a good idea here. So I reached out to my surgeon. I described the symptoms and he said, "You need to get to Emerge ASAP. I think you have a blood clot." So at the time, my wife was on the phone with her family, talking to them. So I went to the internet. That was a big mistake. And I looked up blood clot. And I was absolutely terrified. And I told my wife just to get off the phone, and we got to emerge right away. They did a D-dimer test, and they said that absolutely I have a blood clot. They then did some further analysis with MRIs and such, and it turned out that I had 3 significantly sized blood clots in my femur and 2 in my gastro. So unbeknownst to me, they called in the head hematologist, Dr. Agnes Lee, and she literally left her family on Thanksgiving Day and came to the hospital. She was the medical director, and they had never seen a case like mine as far as the level of blood clots that I had. She showed up and said, "Miss Smith, you know, we have a serious problem. We're fearful that these blood clots will travel to your heart or your brain, and it's a critical situation." And I said, "I don't really know what any of that means. Tell me what to do, please." And then I kind of lost it emotionally, realizing that I had 3 children and that what she was saying to me is that I was at risk of dying in any minute. And I said, "Doctor, I can't die. I have 3 children. Tell me what to do. I'll do whatever you tell me to do." And she said, "Miss Smith, we need to put you on hospital watch and we need to get you treatment ASAP." I said, "Okay." So for 6 days, I was at the hospital and they gave me blood clot thinners administrated by a needle that looked honestly like a horse needle, 25,000 cc's in my stomach. It was such a significant amount that my stomach began bruising. And she wanted me to stay at home, not at the hospital, but come back every morning to do all of these tests because she wanted me to be around my children and my family to help manage the fear, to help manage something could happen, and that to have somebody there 24/7, whereas the hospital, they've got other patients to treat. She needed someone to have eyes on me 24/7. So after 7 days of treatment with this, what I refer to, horse-style drug administration. My stomach was bruised, battered. I was fearful for my life. The doctor said to me, "You know, you're out of danger at this moment. So I'm relieved and we're going to begin treatment for you." And therefore I was under her treatment for 6 months. I now have what they refer to as post-thrombotic syndrome, where 2 of my veins in my gastroc have collapsed forever. So if you had an analogy of a highway and there were 4 lanes and, you know, the highway gets backed up, in my case, I only have 2 veins left. So my highway gets backed up a lot quicker than other folks. So I have to do things to manage this post condition. Like I have to constantly be moving, use a stand-up desk, compression stockings, certain exercises, certain foods, limit alcohol, those sorts of things as a result of having this permanent condition. But I actually wish I'd learned in hindsight that it's actually the opposite. You're supposed to move. You're supposed to keep your blood flowing. And in fact, that doctor did not give me good advice in that what he meant to say is, you know, move, but be mindful that we're also fusing a bone. And some of that narrative was left out. And because I had never, ever been in a hospital a day in my life before this happened to me at 48, I was a literalist. I literally wanted to do exactly what he said because I'd never, ever been in a hospital. But I learned after this that this was in fact not the case. So this 5th phase of my journey is me recognizing and being really clear that every day is a blessing, that I'm here. So part of what I'm doing as a blood clot survivor is being part of the advocacy work that's so important. And that's why my company, Everything Podcasts, so delighted to be in a partnership with the National Blood Clot Alliance, helping share survivor stories, helping educate, helping bring these stories forward so that people know they're not alone. and that there is an incredible organization like the National Blood Clot Alliance that can help people today, tomorrow, next week, next year, because the work that they're doing is not only beautiful, but it's necessary until we're able to change what happens in Congress, what happens in funding, that these people are doing all the hard work now so that we can have a brighter and a better future for people that have this happen to them. Because guess what? It happens every 6 minutes.
An often unexamined component to the lives of blood clot survivors is the day-to-day adjustments in the year's post-clotting event. What is it like to take a flight? What about exercise? How do you adjust and accommodate a new way of living? Here to discuss post-clotting event rehabilitation and aftercare is Dr. Elliot Hout.
So my primary practice in clinical medicine is as a trauma surgeon. I'm the person that I tell people you never want to see. You crash your car, you have a fall, you motorcycle crash, shot, stabbed, assault. Like, that's the stuff I do. I take care of patients after they've been injured. And one of the primary things we as trauma surgeons do is pick and suggest to patients what the best prevention they can do while they're in the hospital and after they're discharged to try to prevent blood clots. And these are pulmonary embolism, you know, clot that goes to the lung, or deep vein thrombosis, a clot in the leg. And we want to try to prevent those. And it's in our DNA to try to do that. The primary thing we do is prescribe medications to help prevent these blood clots. They've mostly been injectable medications, low molecular weight heparin. You've heard about enoxaparin. That's probably the most common go-to medication that we've historically used for decades. There's new data now that aspirin might be an equivalent or a pretty close equivalent to blood clot prevention for patients after trauma. There's a very large study that was published in the New England Journal of Medicine and funded by the Patient-Centered Outcomes Research Institute that showed that might be of benefit. So it might be an option for you after you've been injured that aspirin might be the medication of choice. And that might be while you're in the hospital, or you might get an injection and you take aspirin when you go home or something like that. But after discharge, there's also some benefit for using these medications. So that's probably the most important thing we do to help prevent blood clots in patients after injury. However, there is one other thing that we can do, which is mechanical prevention. So these are we call them the squeezy boots. That's the unofficial term. They're sequential compression devices. They go around your calf and they squeeze on and off, and they help prevent blood clots by actually helping the blood move, number one, and releasing some other factors into the blood that make the blood less likely to develop a blood clot in the legs. So I think that's another potential option for patients in the hospital. We add that on for most patients unless there's a reason not to. And those two things together, these medications and these compression devices, are the things that are probably the best things we can do to try to help prevent blood clots after injury.
So, first of all, wow. I mean, Jen, your story is crazy, and thank you for sharing it. And I can see you sitting at the table thinking about your doctor and thinking about your family. And as a survivor myself, I know how lucky I am to be here as well, and how lucky I am to be here with you and working together to end this. I think, you know, you talked about the stages, and I went through that also. You know, I was angry and confused, and I didn't want to talk about it, and I didn't want anybody to know about it. And then the more work I did on it and myself, frankly, the more perplexed I became as to why this unbelievably huge public health crisis, not just in the United States, but around the world, exists. And frankly, it makes me angry. And so I want to figure out how we can kind of channel our energy together to raise awareness. Like, I listen to your story and I'm like, wow, that's me. Wow, that's me. Wow, that's me. How do we figure out how to work together to end this. Because there's in the United States alone, almost 1 million people a year that are getting blood clots. You know, 100,000 people a year that die from this, unnecessarily so. So let's be in the conversation about, what do we want? How do we end this? How do we do this together? Your firm, our firm, how do we work together?
You know, Leslie, it's so interesting, that question, because, you know, it's actually really simple. And I know that seems a bit counterintuitive to where we find ourselves today with this advocacy work that we've decided to do together as partners. Really, there are three components of bringing this forward as far as helping change the world. Meaning, if we work together, it's really three simple things that we are doing together, which is, you know, what we're doing in this partnership. And it's bringing awareness to this problem. Because a lot of people actually don't understand what blood clots are from the most basic level. And through that basic level of awareness, they also, because they don't know what a blood clot is or how serious it is, they don't understand what the symptoms are. Because in some cases, they're very subtle. In other cases, they're extreme, but they mimic other medical conditions, such as heart attack, such as stroke, when you're talking about, you know, a PE. Or, you know, hey, you broke your leg. Of course you're going to get shooting pains in your leg. Yeah, well, this seems weird. It's in a different spot. No, that happens. You know, the body talks back. So I think the primary objective is to share the awareness and share what it is, what it looks like, what we need to watch for. And that can be done by sharing the stories that we're bringing forward in this podcast series. But the other way it can be done is through the medical system, by creating, whether it's brochures or bookmarks or a digital profile, so people have a point of reference and they can learn about it, whether if it's happening to them or someone in their family. So I think that's very important as the first thing we need to do. And I think the second thing we need to do is to be able to have an outreach that is really about the mission-based work of advocacy around blood clot disorders. And that's reaching out to individuals that have a story to tell, whether it's political figures or celebrities or our everyday heroes, to be able to give them a floor, to be able to give them a platform to share their stories. Because nothing is more beautiful, Leslie, than connecting to a personal story in an intimate way. And podcasting does that so beautifully. People can be vulnerable because you're listening to audio and you're not necessarily seeing it in video. So they're willing to be a little bit more vulnerable and open up and share these difficult stories, because they are, in a lot of cases, as you said, 100,000 people a year die from blood clots. I'm one of the lucky ones. It's 100,000 people that aren't. And those stories need to be heard as well, because these are children that pass away from blood clots. These are people that are athletes, Olympic athletes. These are people that are 20-somethings that, you know, slip in a restaurant and break their ankle. I mean, these stories are everyday stories and nobody knows about them.
So I think you've touched on something so important, which is, we need to be that platform to share those stories, and we need people to come forward and share those stories. There's almost no federal funding for this whatsoever. And what moves the needle is sharing those stories in DC and saying, hey, come on, we don't need to have 100,000 people die every single year. We don't need 1 million people getting this. This is highly, highly preventable. It's time now to support our initiative to raise awareness. You know, you spoke so eloquently about your signs and symptoms. Those are very different from what I experienced. And that's part of, you know, our messaging, how we get out and message in front of people about those signs and symptoms. So I had a pulmonary embolism. Mine came from someplace in my body. They don't know. So I'm called unprovoked, which is basically a nice word for saying, sorry, we don't know where yours came from. But it ended up in my lungs. and my breathing all of a sudden was cut off. And I mean, it was like somebody putting their hands around my neck and I couldn't breathe anymore. And so your story, your signs and symptoms, my story, my signs and symptoms, and hundreds of thousands of other people, we need to share those stories and get them out there. I think we need to stop being so nice about how we message also. And we need to start calling on people to raise their voices, because you also said something really interesting was about sports figures and famous people and whatnot. And so, you know, Leslie Lake goes into Washington, D.C. and raises her voice. That's great. But you know what? Serena Williams, arguably the greatest female, frankly, greatest tennis player of all time, she almost died of a pulmonary embolism after giving birth to her daughter. If it wasn't for the fact that she experienced one before, so she's had two blood clots, she diagnosed herself in the hospital. She knew the signs and symptoms. That's why she's alive. She wanted the CT scan immediately. She knew she needed to be hooked up to warfarin. If she hadn't advocated for herself, she probably would have died. And so we're in this position now where we can advocate for other people. And that's what we need to be doing. You know, when I look at people like Al Roker, who everybody knows, again, pulmonary embolism survivor. We need these voices to help us raise awareness. And I, for one, want to call on all of these people to come join us. Be advocates with, you know, Jennifer and Leslie and everybody at Everything Podcast and everybody at National Blood Clot Alliance. And let's raise awareness together. I think we have to stop being so nice about messaging and start demanding that they listen to us, that they listen to these patients' stories, and we start getting support to put an end to this, because this is so highly preventable. You know, every day as the president of the National Blood Clot Alliance, I hear so many stories about people who have lost loved ones to blood clots. And it is the most heartbreaking thing to listen to a parent talk about how their child died from a preventable blood clot. And so I want to say to you, as my partner, as my friend, as my fellow advocate, let's start putting the pressure on and raising awareness like it's never been raised before, and calling on some of these people to help us, because we need help.
Leslie, I totally agree with you. And in fact, you know, if you look at any of this work that we're talking about doing, isn't just advocacy, but it's mission-based work. You know, we are great as a society of many, not of one. So I'm with you, Leslie. Let's make a call out for everybody to come forward. And quite frankly, Al Roker needs to share his story, because it's a phenomenal story. And, you know, Al, we're willing to listen to your story at any point, because it's phenomenal, and we can help make that change, and you can help us do that.
I'll throw another one out. Did you know that President Biden has had a pulmonary embolism? I welcome him coming on the show as well and sharing his personal story, because it would definitely save lives.
And you look at folks like Hillary Clinton. You look at other folks like, the gentleman who helped develop the Seinfeld series.
David Mandel, also a pulmonary embolism survivor.
You know, and these are all these people that we know, admire, and love. This has happened. This happens to people every 6 minutes, Leslie.
Yeah. And you know, basketball players like Chris Bosh, or football players like Trey Smith with the Kansas City Chiefs. It happens to everyone. And I think, you know, one of the things that we shouldn't lose sight on is the fact that it can happen to anyone. So it's not male. It's not female. It's not white. It's not black. It's everybody is at risk of getting a blood clot. And how do you prevent it? More education, more awareness, and knowing those signs and symptoms, and knowing that they can vary from person to person. I, for one, am really sick of not getting enough traction on this topic. And one of the things that makes me the angriest is that this is so highly preventable. And so if you said to somebody, hey, you could prevent someone from getting a heart attack or getting cancer or having a stroke, would you want to do that? Of course you would. Everybody would say yes. But if you said, hey, I could actually help prevent someone from getting a blood clot. And all it takes is knowing the signs and symptoms of a blood clot. I could help save 100,000 lives a year in the U.S. alone. I could help almost a million people a year prevent getting a blood clot and having it, you know, really impact their life for the rest of their life, potentially. Would you do it?
1,000%.
Exactly. So let's do it. Enough of the fluff. And I have an idea. I want to throw it out to you. I've thrown it out to other people before. Nobody is up for the challenge, Jennifer. I think you might be. It's called Project Stop the Clot. And we commit together as partners, as friends, as survivors to promote Project Stop the Clot, where our goal will be to reduce the incident and mortality level of blood clots by 50% in 5 years. Would you do it? Will you be my partner in this?
Wow, Leslie, that is an aggressive goal and I love it. In fact, you know what? We absolutely would be delighted and honored to be your partner. And Leslie, it's going to take us moving mountains. It's going to make some feathers be ruffled because there's a lot of politics in the medical system, as you know. But you know what, Leslie? We're up for the challenge. And in fact, you know what? It would be our honor to do that. And this aggressive goal just really speaks to, excuse me for being so direct for a moment, but it's time to cut the shit, get this work done because we have lives to save. And you know what? We have the platform to do that. And, you know, pardon my language, I'm saying it because you know what? This needs to be a little bit heated because quite frankly, if people are doing all of this prevention, whether it's heart disease or cancer or any of these other things, because it's all to protect life. All of this disease prevention and awareness and branding around it is all to protect life. We want to live. This is no different, Leslie. And blood clots have had this ridiculous stigma because of a lack of understanding and education.
Absolutely.
And I'm tired of it because quite frankly, I didn't get the right advice. And this could have never happened. And now I live with this for the rest of my life, but I'm still one of the ones that are blessed. I'm here today. So yes, I'm up for that challenge. Bring it on. And sorry about my one swear word. I'm usually pretty good. But, you know, I do feel a little bit of passion and tension and frustration. And I'm up for this because your goal is super aggressive. And I like it. And I think it deserves to be that aggressive. And we need to make some noise, Les. And we need people to just understand this does not have to happen. So we're going to help with that.
People need to stop dying. People need to stop dying. And we have the power to do that. And we will do this through patient stories. We will do this with family stories. We will have doctors, nurses, clinicians. We will have people help us with this story. But game on, Jennifer. Let's go.
Let's go. I'm in, Les. 1,000%.
Jen, thank you so much for joining us here today. This was amazing. I came in and I was like, so excited to hear her tell her story. I was a little nervous. I was a little angry thinking about the lack of awareness that's out there. And now I am so pumped by your commitment to, you know, be part of Project Stop the Clot. We're going to save lives. And I'm just so delighted that you joined us here today. Thank you for everything, for your friendship, for your partnership, for your advocacy, for your willingness to work hard to just reach so many people around the world. I can't thank you enough.
Leslie, it's absolutely our pleasure. You know, sharing the story is one thing, but this surprise that showed up on the show today about the Project Stop the Clot, my brain is spinning 1,000 miles a minute. And our team at Everything Podcast, you know, we're a global podcast agency. We're not only delighted to be a part of this challenge, but this mission-based work is so special to us because we know, and we have past history here, where we know sharing these gorgeous stories about this kind of work does save lives. And, you know, the fact that you're giving us that opportunity, we consider it absolutely a privilege. And I'm looking forward not only to this advocacy work, but, you know, by providing that opportunity, because that's what this is, to not only save lives, but to change lives. So I'm delighted. And I thank you for giving our company this opportunity. And I'm really looking forward to it, Les.
Well, we will be celebrating, hopefully in 5 years' time, when we've actually made the biggest impact ever tackling blood clots together.
Can't wait.
It takes courage to enact viable and long-lasting change for your community. It takes grit and perseverance and selflessness in knowing that, though you may not necessarily see the fruits of your labor, change will still come because of your work. All we can do is know that every day is a new opportunity to enact change in this world. Change for the better, forever.
We want to thank Jennifer for sharing her strength and vulnerability with us today, and to thank you for joining us here on Taking a Breath. A special thank you to Dr. Elliot Hout from Johns Hopkins for sharing his endlessly useful insight into all things clotting. For more information on risks, prevention, and community, please visit stoptheclot.org.
We know the patient because we are the patient. Together with listeners like you, we can collectively stop the clot.
Another Everything Podcast production. Visit everythingpodcast.com, a division of Pattison Media. Subscribe wherever you get your podcast.